This does not appeal to Carpenter, he says that this object must have been an ornament. According to Brewster, it was not an ornament, but a true optical lens. In that case, in ruins of an old civilization upon this earth, has been found an accursed thing that was, acceptably, not a product of any old civilization indigenous to this earth. 10. Early explorers have Florida mixed up with Newfoundland. But the confusion is worse than that still earlier. It arises from simplicity. Very early explorers think that all land westward is one land, India. Awareness of other lands as well as India comes as a slow process. I do not now think of things arriving upon this earth from some especial other world. That was my notion when I started to collect our data. Or, as is a commonplace of observation, all intellection begins with the illusion of homogeneity. It's one of Spencer's data, we see homogeneousness in all things distant, or with which we have small acquaintance. Advance from the relatively homogeneous to the relatively heterogeneous is Spencerian philosophy like everything else, so-called, not that it was really Spencer's discovery, but was taken from von Baer, who, in turn, was continuous with preceding evolutionary speculation. Our own expression is that all things are acting to advance to the homogeneous, or are trying to localize homogeneousness. Homogeneousness is an aspect of the universal, wherein it is a state that does not merge away into something else. We regard homogeneousness as an aspect of positiveness, but it is our acceptance that infinite frustrations of attempts to positivize manifest themselves in infinite heterogeneity, so that though things try to localize homogeneousness they end up in heterogeneity so great that it amounts to infinite dispersion or indistinguishability. So all concepts are little attempted positivenesses, but soon have to give in to compromise, modification, nullification, merging away into indistinguishability unless, here and there, in the world's history, there may have been a superdogmatist, who, for only an infinitesimal of time, has been able to hold out against heterogeneity or modification or doubt or listening to reason, or loss of identity in which case instant translation to heaven or the positive absolute. Odd thing about Spencer is that he never recognized that homogeneity, integration, and definiteness are all words for the same state, or the state that we call positiveness. What we call his mistake is in that he regarded homogeneousness as negative. I began with a notion of some one other world, from which objects and substances have fallen to this earth, which had, or which, to less degree, has a tutelary interest in this earth, which is now attempting to communicate with this earth modifying, because of data which will pile up later, into acceptance that some other world is not attempting but has been, for centuries, in communication with a sect, perhaps, or a secret society, or certain esoteric ones of this earth's inhabitants. I lose a great deal of hypnotic power in not being able to concentrate attention upon some one other world. As I have admitted before, I'm intelligent, as contrasted with the orthodox. I haven't the aristocratic disregard of a New York curator or an Eskimo medicine man. I have to dissipate myself in acceptance of a host of other worlds, size of the moon, some of them, one of them, at least tremendous thing, we'll take that up later. Vast, amorphous aerial regions, to which such definite words as worlds and planets seem inapplicable. And artificial constructions that I have called superconstructions, one of them about the size of Brooklyn, I should say, offhand. And one or more of them will shape things a goodly number of square miles in area. I think that earlier in this book, before we liberalized into embracing everything that comes along, your indignation, or indigestion would have expressed in the notion that, if this were so, astronomers would have seen these other worlds and regions and vast geometric constructions. You'd have had that notion, you'd have stopped there. But the attempt to stop is saying enough to the insatiable. In cosmic punctuation there are no periods, illusion of periods is incomplete view of colons and semicolons. We can't stop with the notion that if there were such phenomena, astronomers would have seen them. Because of our experience with suppression and disregard, we suspect, before we go into the subject at all, that astronomers have seen them, that navigators and meteorologists have seen them, that individual scientists and other trained observers have seen them many times. That it is the system that has excluded data of them. As to the law of gravitation, and astronomers' formulas, remember that these formulas worked out in the time of Laplace as well as they do now. But there are hundreds of planetary bodies now known that were then not known. So a few hundred worlds more of ours won't make any difference. Laplace knew of about only 30 bodies in this solar system, about 600 are recognized now. What are the discoveries of geology and biology to a theologian? His formulas still work out as well as they ever did. If the law of gravitation could be stated as a real utterance, it might be a real resistance to us. But we are told only that gravitation is gravitation. Of course, to an intermediatist, nothing can be defined except in terms of itself, but even the orthodox, in what seems to me to be the innate premonitions of realness, not founded upon experience, agree that to define a thing in terms of itself is not real definition. It is said that by gravitation is meant the attraction of all things proportionately to mass and inversely as the square of the distance. Mass would mean interattraction holding together final particles, if there were final particles. Then, until final particles be discovered, only one term of this expression survives, or mass is attraction. But distance is only extent of mass, unless one holds out for absolute vacuum among planets, a position against which we could bring a host of data. But there is no possible means of expressing that gravitation is anything other than attraction. So there is nothing to resist us but such a phantom as that gravitation is the gravitation of all gravitations proportionately to gravitation and inversely as the square of gravitation. In a quasi-existence, nothing more sensible than this can be said upon any so-called subject. Perhaps there are higher approximations to ultimate sensibleness. Nevertheless, we seem to have a feeling that with the system against us we have a kind of resistance here. We'd have felt so formerly, at any rate. I think the Dr. Grays and Professor Hitchcocks have modified our trustfulness toward indistinguishability. As to the perfection of this system that quasi opposes us and the infallibility of its mathematics, as if there could be real mathematics in a mode of seeming where twice two are not four, we've been told over and over of their vindication in the discovery of Neptune. I'm afraid that the course we're taking will turn out like every other development. We began humbly, admitting that we're of the damned. But our eyebrows. Just a faint flicker in them, or in one of them, every time we hear of the triumphal discovery of Neptune, this monumental achievement of theoretical astronomy, as the textbooks call it. The whole trouble is that we've looked it up. The textbooks omit this. That, instead of the orbit of Neptune agreeing with the calculations of Adams and Le Verrier, it was so different that Le Verrier said that it was not the planet of his calculations. Later it was thought best to say no more upon that subject. The textbooks omit this. That, in 1846, everyone who knew a sine from a cosine was out chining and cosining for a planet beyond Uranus. Two of them guessed right. To some minds, even after Le Verrier's own rejection of Neptune, the word guessed may be objectionable, but, according to Professor Pierce, of Harvard, the calculations of Adams and Le Verrier would have applied quite as well to positions many degrees from the position of Neptune. Or for Professor Pierce's demonstration that the discovery of Neptune was only a happy accident, CPROC. Amer. Academic. Sciences, 1-65. For references, see Lowell's Evolution of Worlds. Or Comets, another nebulous resistance to our own notions. As to eclipses, I have notes upon several of them that did not occur upon scheduled time, though with differences only of seconds and one delightful lost soul, deep buried, but buried in the ultra-respectable records of the Royal Astronomical Society, upon an eclipse that did not occur at all. That delightful, ultra-sponsored thing of perdition is too good and malicious to be dismissed with passing notice. We'll have him later. Throughout the history of astronomy, every comet that has come back upon predicted time, not that, essentially, there was anything more abstruse about it than is a prediction that you can make of a postman's periodicities tomorrow, was advertised for all it was worth. It's the way reputations are worked up for fortune tellers by the faithful. The comets that didn't come back omitted or explained. Oerik's comet. It came back slower and slower. But the astronomers explained. Be almost absolutely sure of that, they explained. They had it all worked out and formulated and proved why that comet was coming back slower and slower, and there the damn thing began coming faster and faster. Halley's Comet. Astronomy, the perfect science, as we astronomers like to call it. Jacobi. It's my own notion that if, in a real existence, an astronomer could not tell one longitude from another, he'd be sent back to this purgatory of ours until he could meet that simple requirement.